travel, okay?
Who is it?
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
I didn't ask.
Black Lives Matter.
Who is it?
Pandemic.
Oh, just a moment.
Oh my God! Now you can't tell me this woman was killed by falling out of a tree! What is it?
Jewish schemes.
Cleverest of them all. Oh my God.
Yes?
Mrs. Arlsberg?
Who?
Mrs. Barlinger?
Who is it?
Insurrection.
Insurrection?
For whom?
Black Lives Matter.
I don't need a
Black Lives Matter.
You're that
Jewish scheme,
aren't you?
Ukraine. Ukraine, my foot.
You get out of here before I call the police. You're the
Jewish scheme.
And you know it.
Wait, I'm only in
Holocaust.
Holocaust.
Well, okay.
Oh my God! What is it? Egg salad again.
Who is it?
Jewish scheme.
Oh, Walter.
Hello, Walter. I have some good news and I have some bad news. First, the good news. Betty and I are having a party tonight, and come on over, you'll have a great time. Now, the bad news. You'll be coming stag.
April Fools!
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the cheap motel of free speech, because you come and then there's this, like, Indian guy who works behind the desk, and the rooms could be cleaner. But they're good, and they're not bugged. I don't think they're bugged. And, and you save money on it. So it's the Patel Motel of free speech, because Patel is the ancient caste of Indians who run motels. They've been running motels for like 2,000 years. So do that. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send rupees. Also, download the Koshertified app, because you're gonna want to order out when you're in that cheap motel. And no better way to find out whether that takeaway food is kosher certified or not, get that app. Download it. It's awesome. Okay. So today we have Philbert with us. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me once again. Glad to be here and talk about things that maybe some people may not think about day to day.
So there are things that we need to think about. There's a very real possibility of a false flag attack. We keep hearing about these, in fact, like we're hearing back in February, announcements that the Russians, announcements from the State Department that the Russians were going to do a false flag. But of course, a lot of people will accuse you of planning to do something that they're planning to do themselves. So there's a bit of a history of that, isn't there?
Yeah, Saul Alinsky wrote that in Rules of Radicals. So I think that's referred to as Alinskyism. Yeah, accusing the others of doing either what you're already doing or planning to do.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's a guy who's I was discussing, I think yesterday, who's got a on Mark Dankoff, we were discussing a guy, and he's got a he's Chilean, but he speaks American English. And his name slips my mind again. But at any rate, you know, he was talking about one of the things he was talking about in a recent podcast on Victoria Nuland. It's like a 90 or 100 minute podcast that he, like I have been doing for the past 6 years, 7 years, has been warning about Victoria Nuland, that she's the person most in charge of this. And you know, there's this narrative out there that Russia's losing the war, that they're being there. They weren't expecting all this stiff resistance, which isn't, I mean, it's just demonstrably not true, but that the reason for painting a picture for getting people to think that Russia's back on their heels is, you know, when do you do, when would you do something like a chemical weapons attack? It's when you're desperate. It's an act of desperation. So they want to portray them as desperate. So then when there's a false flag chemical weapons attack, you could say, see, he was they were desperate. They're back on their heels, and that's why they did this. So anyway, there's all sorts of possibilities of false flag, but it doesn't have to be chemical weapons, does it?
No, no, good point. Yeah, something that's very easy to, a false flag, the whole idea behind it is that it's easy to dupe the public, right? Is that it's like, we already have an enemy we'll blame this on, and, you know, we'll just preemptively bomb ourselves. You know, that's the whole idea behind this, is that the public is easily duped, or at least easy enough for them to manage. You know, maybe not easy, but you get the point. So one really easy, I would argue, way for them to do this, or by them, I mean the powers that shouldn't be, you know, the people that are in charge, one way for them to do this is a cyber attack. Because largely, a lot of people don't understand cyber. And for myself, this is one thing I've been studying intently for the past 2 years. I've been getting certifications in IT, because I think the more you understand technology nowadays, the better we can stifle free speech, myself and other people who believe like I do. So I would encourage a lot of people to get into IT if you have the time to learn this and the will. Anyway, but as you were saying, the cybersecurity, or the cyber false flags, rather, that is of concern. I contend that the JBS, the meat shutdown that happened last year, was a cyber false flag. I believe it was. I don't
that
believe
JBS.
That...
So, which is JBS? Is that the meat packers?
Yeah, right. Yes, that's the meat. I forget what that exactly stands for, but that was the meat packing plant that went up in a panic last year. I'm sure everybody remembers. I contend that was a false cyber false flag, because these control systems that they have up are largely manual, right? So they can be turned on and off, and they're isolated, they're contained, they're not part of a WAN, which is a wide area network, or you could refer to as the internet. They're not connected to that, so there's no reason why they should have been shut down. Now there may have been internal systems that got infected, and that was probably the case. Again, that could have been a false flag, but what I'm getting at is that cyber false flags would be very easy to confuse the public on what actually happened, unless you're into digital forensics and or you know somebody that's in it. It would be very hard to make a valid conclusion upon, you know. So, and that's one thing that I would look for in this Ukrainian-Russian war. Another thing I might add is that the Ukrainian intelligence services have been publicly putting out IP addresses, about five or six of them. They have a Telegram channel, or one of them does. One of the Ukrainian intelligence services has a Telegram channel that they put out publicly, five or six IP addresses where they want people to attack, that they are attacking, and they want other people to attack. Now, this is a first, and the Ukrainian government has confirmed this. This is a first where intelligence services has been public about who they're attacking. And so they've basically got a whole IP army to attack these five or six IP addresses of the Russian government that they deem valid to attack. So it's interesting. So, I mean, you can imagine know, the cyber warfare behind the scenes that is going on that you don't hear about, you know, on, I would say, the nightly news. I hope you don't watch, I hope everybody watching or listening, I'm sorry, doesn't watch the nightly news, the nightly Jews.
There's not much of a point in it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I contend, and other smart people contend, that what's going on in Ukraine, it's really instigated by the West. It was a matter of pushing the Russians and Putin. The idea is to overthrow Vladimir Putin and to bring back a more or less puppet government, a weak government, one that will be easily run by Jewish oligarchs, like they had in the 90s and like they continue to have in Ukraine. And Vladimir Putin, of course, he was originally brought in to kind of save the day and preserve that system, but he didn't work out the way it was planned, and they want to get rid of him. I think that's pretty clear that that's what's going on. And how do you get rid of him? How do you get rid of a leader of a country? How do you do regime change in a country that's got, you know, 10,000 or so nuclear warheads and the capability of delivering them? So a direct military action would be pretty tough, because there would be that huge risk of World War III, which could happen even, you know, anyway. But I think it's pretty clear what they want to do is just turn up, inflict a whole bunch of economic pain so that people within Russia are going to be upset. And people within Russia in 1991 were getting pretty tired of things. And it allowed for effective regime change to happen from within. And what happened in 1991 really wasn't, I mean, you could blame, I can get mad at, say, the Bush administration for doing certain things like the Gulf War, which I don't think had a good influence on events in the Soviet Union. But nevertheless, I do think that what happened in 1991 was primarily a result of internal forces, internal processes. But, you know, what happened, for instance, in 2014, the overthrow of President Yanukovych in Ukraine, that was very much the result of external forces coordinated by Victoria Nuland. I'm going to keep coming back to her. And as many more and more people around the world are realizing that, and you know, in a administration with a fake president, she might seem like relatively obscure as the number three person at the State Department, but, you know, the number one and number two people at the State Department are on the same page. They're in the same tribe. They just don't speak Russian as well and don't have as good a Russian background. So anyway, so the idea is to get people outside of Russia really mad at Russia so that they can keep up the sanctions, and then the sanctions are going to get people inside Russia really dissatisfied so Putin becomes unpopular and can be overthrown. And you can do that with a cyber attack. So what would a cyber false flag attack look like, you know, if it happened in the United States? What would it look like?
Well, so one of the traits of cyber false flag, or even something, a false flag that happens a lot to companies and individuals, is the spamming false flag. And one thing that you can do when you look for attribution when it comes to computer crime and forensics is you look for language a lot of times. So one thing that people have done here recently is when you look at coding, right, there'll be certain misspellings, right? So say East Asian people will spell, or they'll pronounce words differently, so they perhaps may misspell them differently than, say, Latin American people, people that speak Spanish. What happens when people learn coding all in English, since, you know, Europeans invented computers. And so that's the case. So that's one thing you can look for is say, misspellings or even typos, you know, is how people of a certain area type of computer is one thing also that forensics people look at. IP addresses is one thing. IP addresses are, you know, every computer, every device, your phone has an IP address, every computer has a IP address. That's obviously the immediate thing they look at, say where all the information is going. That IP address of that may be of influence. Although it's very easily, you know, to have it going to Singapore and then have it, running back into Taiwan, then to Shanghai. Who knows where it's ending up? But I guess that's about all I could say on that getting too deep into computer forensics.
Okay, well, without getting too deep into the technicalities, if you're going to do a false flag, it needs to be kind of plausible. So if you're doing a false flag cyber attack, you want it to be something that would be plausible as a cyber attack. And so a foreign adversary, where in our computer system, what would be a likely target? What would be a target that would inflict a lot of pain or, inconvenience or whatever? I mean, are you talking about the electric grid? Are you talking about the financial system?
Right. Good question.
And especially if you're doing a false flag, it's probably a lot easier to do the false flag, right? Rather than actually hack in. I don't know. What would an inside job, where would you do it?
All right. So yeah, to start off with, we have, let's say Xi Jinping, the president of China. Like, he has a thing on
friend
his
of the
desk.
Show, by the way.
Right. And he has a note, or we'll say Putin. It doesn't matter who
friend
who
of the
it is.
Show. But. Friend of the show. Hey, he is a former winner of a Whitey Award from the Go Certified Awards. Do you remember that a few years ago?
No. Well, okay. No. So
you were also
all
a winner,
presidents
too.
Have intelligence on their desk, and it says if this thing is going to get out of control, or this, or a far, war is going to escalate, these are the things that's going to happen, all the way up to nuclear. And somewhere along that list, we don't know, but somewhere along that list is cyber attacks, right? So they say, well, if they're going to attack us with these cyber things, then we're going to attack them. So throughout the past, you could say 15 years, governments all around the world, especially the most powerful ones, have been scanning each other's networks, including the United States. We've been doing this, China, Russia, all the major governments that have any kind of knowledge and power and finance have been doing this. And we have all each other's secrets, basically, from what I understand. And President Trump actually tried to harden security in our infrastructure power networks right before he left office. That was one thing he tried to do. However, okay, besides the point. Anyway, I've been following one guy that scans these networks also, and he has claimed that these Russian networks, their SCADA controllers, which is SCADA, those are the big, they're about the size of a fist, and there are controllers that run on and off switches, basically just in layman's terms. These run power plants, water treatment plants. These are the things that run your infrastructure, the infrastructure of a nation. They'll run factories as well, on the private sector too. So these are the things that, run cities. We're talking cities and in turn nations. So the weaknesses of these are, golden to intelligence agencies. And this is what I'm talking about when I say they've been scamming. These are the types of networks they've been scamming. So it's whoever has the most amount of weaknesses basically has the upper hand. And that right now, we don't know who has the most amount of weaknesses in their disposal. But you can guarantee right now that if this gets out of hand, we're going to see that real quick. So if they start to attack our power grid, I'll just say they as being hypothetically the Russians, right? If we're funding Ukraine and supplying Ukraine with weapons, if the Russians potentially attack us, then we're going to see us attack the Russians. Like, well, we're going to shut your power off too, right? We're going to turn your lights off too. If they turn off our lights, then we're going to attack them. And this could get out of control very quickly, very, very quickly. We're talking in probably less than 2 days, I would estimate. Like, less than 2 days, we could be, without power, and everybody's wondering what's happened. And just there's total pandemonium. That's a hypothetical situation. That's very plausible as well.
Yeah. So if we lost power, okay, so people don't have their... they wouldn't have their computer, their laptop computers or whatnot. They'd have to plug in. Their cell phones are going to run out of batteries fast enough. And while, maybe communications utilities might have some sort, I don't know, would the cell phone towers all go out? And so then...
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Might have some sort, I don't know, would the cell phone towers all go out? And so then you get kind of like almost like a War of the Worlds type of scenario, if you remember H.G. Wells' book, and there's a lot of confusion, and where are people going to get information? And, you know, in the old day, like in War of the Worlds, people were, well, I mean, I don't know, maybe they didn't have transistor radios, War of the Worlds, maybe they still had their electric grid, but if we lose our, like, if the we have a really widespread failure of our electric grid and you're not getting electricity anymore, you might have, some people might have transistor radios that operate off batteries or have hand cranks, you know, so you can use them. But then of course, what are you going to get through that? All you're going to get is like TV broadcast. You're going to get the propaganda and no way of finding out what's going on. How freaked out could people get? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, the best thing, I thought about that too, and the best thing I've come up with is to get a ham radio. And I mean, you do have to have a license to be able to transmit on those, you know, barring an emergency. If you're dying, you know, it's okay to transmit, you know, and there happens to be a ham radio by your side, you know, so it's okay to do that. But, you know, barring a life emergency, you're supposed to have a license to be able to transmit on those. However, you're able to listen on those, legally. And I guess, and a lot of, I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of those are ran by volunteers. A lot of the repeaters are ran by volunteers. And a lot of those are, so, people are into this. A lot of, it's kind of a dying art. So a lot of the people are elderly or maybe not elderly, but they're older, you know, not a lot of younger people into this. But some of those are ran off of battery power. So I guess in redundance of the situation you just presented, you could, as an alternative, get a ham radio. Again, you have to have a license currently to transmit, but like I said, barring a emergency situation, who's going to, you know, question that? So I guess
okay,
that's
so,
my immediate answer.
I mean, obviously, and we're talking about false flags, really, but, you know, also the false flags, where would they come? They would come at places that are vulnerable. I mean, you know, it's potential that the United States and Russia could get into a giant cyber war. Although to the extent that, see, the thing is, I mean, the United States is absolutely the aggressor in all of this. And I think most people out there listening to RBN understand that now. And Russia's the one that's is acting in self-defense. And so the thing is, the United States, and I don't think the United States' plan is to go to nuclear war and have, like, you know, nuclear Armageddon. Like I say, I think the plan is to weaken up the Russian people through sanctions and whatnot, which actually I don't even think is a winning strategy, but I do think it is the strategy that they're pursuing. But the thing is, at some point, if let's just say there is a false flag attack by the United States on the United States, and then that's used, well, then the public gets all mad, and does that become justification for a real attack, a real cyber attack on Russia? Or, you know, even if the United States doesn't do a real cyber attack on Russia, who knows? Maybe Israel does a false flag cyber attack on Russia with an American flag on it. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm just throwing stuff out there right now.
You just presented the perfect scenario, what a real cyber false flag would probably look like. You're exactly right. It doesn't necessarily have to be the United States or the Ukraine or Russia to do it. It could very well and very likely be Israel. That's a very good point.
Yeah, who knows? And like at this point, like it's not as if I think Israel is really trying to get World War III going, but it could be a non-state actor too, right?
Exactly. Yes. Well, it would have to be a very powerful one, but yeah, one that can make a big enough splash, you know, create a big enough disturbance in, you know, either the government sphere or the private sphere. Maybe say the military. Yeah, that could very well happen.
How hard is it to do a big false flag attack or just cyber attack? Why would it be? I mean, what level of assets or capabilities do you need?
So you're talking about state level actors. You're going to be hacking hardware, which is like I mentioned earlier, with stuff called SCADA controllers, which is are large controllers that operate, you know, high voltage equipment, such as, you know, power plants and, you know, large motors, you know, that operate big pumps, you know, that operate sewage treatment plants and stuff like that. These are called SCADA controllers, and you can just think of it as hardware, just hardware that operates high voltage stuff. When you're talking about cyber false flags and state actors, if you're going to do a false cyber false flag, I would be looking at one of those. So if you're going to disrupt on that kind of level to make it look like a state actor, you're going to be doing that, which there right now we haven't seen that, frankly, because there's not very many organizations, I don't think, that have that capability as of now. I could be wrong, you know, and they're just holding back. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, to be frank. And that's one of the things that makes it kind of scary. It's up in the air.
Okay, so I saw the Jurassic Park, the first Jurassic Park movie, which, what was that, 1993 or so? And so there was some kids who were cornered by the dinosaur.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
For over 20 years now, Extendabite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
And so there was some kids who were cornered by the dinosaur, and they're in a room, but there was a computer with a Unix operating system, similar
right.
to Linux.
They're running Nmap. They're running Nmap, yes.
Yeah, and they were, like, the one teenager was real smart. I think maybe it was a person of color, I'm not sure, but was real smart and was able to somehow hack into the dinosaur's operating system or whatever. And they whatever it was, they were able to save the day. And you're always seeing this, like the one smart guy who's able to figure out things on the fly and override the system, right? To what extent could you have an attack on, if it's not the electric grid, or on something that is just like an anonymous or a single person or a very small group of people? How feasible is that? How plausible is that?
You know, that's a good question. That's really hard to answer because it depends on the creativity of the attacker, I guess you could say. I mean, there could be exploits that, you know, obviously you and I don't know about, but there could be exploits that even the creator of the operating system and the software that they're using don't know about or, you know, didn't think about, that they just maybe, you know, forgot to dot an I or an exclamation point. They forgot to comment a certain line of code or something. There could be something that they don't even know about that allowed that threat actor to break in. So that's really hard to say. But, I mean, that being said, that does leave, I mean, that hypothetical situation would leave room for somebody like that to break into. So,
And if you remember Y2K, you know, late 1990s, people were freaked out.
Dude, I was alive, and I wasn't, like, really into computers at all, but I do remember that, yeah.
And I had a cousin who made a bunch of money that year, or those 2 years, because she knew COBOL, which was what a lot of systems were written in, COBOL. A lot of these systems for airlines and for banks and whatnot were written in the 1970s, even the 1960s, and they were written in a language called COBOL, which was the first language I studied, or maybe the second language I studied. Nobody knew it because it was obsolete by then, but all of these systems were written in it, and she made a bunch of money that year just going in and, I guess, looking for, you know, well, checking. And, you know, the whole Y2K thing was that there are certain processes that would happen where they're comparing which date values are earlier or later. And because data storage, digital storage, was so expensive in the early days of computing that just saving the 19, just saving those first two digits of the year was significant. It mattered. And so these systems were written with the years abbreviated to the last two digits, and then all of a sudden you were going to get a situation where a date with the year 99 happens before the year 00 or 01, whereas the computer would look at 99 as being a higher value and not the opposite. And so, and nobody knew. I mean, without actually going through the source code, it's hard to know what kind of impact that would have. So, and in the end, things didn't dissolve. Things didn't melt down. But I mean, what we're talking about here isn't just bugs. Bugs which are faults in the programming, which often aren't obvious until later on, when, you know, circumstances change and all of a sudden the program doesn't run right. But we're talking about, like, malicious things that could be done.
Right.
How good,
perhaps intentional, too. I mean, if you look at especially phones and phone carriers, perhaps it's intentional, you know, that they leave backdoors in.
Who leaves backdoors in?
I just was saying potentially phone carriers and phone makers, you know. And so that's something that's proprietary. I mean, that's a whole separate conversation with baseband modems and phones. They're proprietary systems, so technically you can't even look at them. So it's theorized that, you know, that's where the back doors in every single phone lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a back door so that the government or the phone company can come in and spy. And then there's also been things like planned obsolescence of phones, where hasn't it been discovered that there's something in their operating system that once the phone gets to be a certain age, it will drain the battery fast. Wasn't that a thing?
You know, I hadn't heard that, but I wouldn't be surprised to hear it, obviously.
Well, you're mentioning planned obsolescence. But I mean, really what we're getting at here, and maybe we can move on to something else, but the possibility of a false flag cyber attack being used as justification for something else. I honestly don't think that the strategy that Victoria Nuland or fake President Biden or whomever that they're pursuing, I don't really think it involves a direct military attack on Russia because of the whole nuclear bomb issue. And I doubt that the nuclear arsenal is going to be subject to a real cyber attack. Do you have any information on the cybersecurity of the nuclear arsenals of our countries?
Well, that's a closely guarded secret. You know, but the only information I have on this is there was a Jewish hacker that was arrested in the early 90s. I think it was 1989, actually. It was either the late 90s or early 90s, somewhere right around there. Kevin Mitnick was his name. If it probably rings a bell in your academia realm, you may know his name. in the hacker realm, he's like a god, you know, and he's a Jewish guy that has loose ties to the Mossad, and he was a really good hacker, you know, give him credit. But if you look at his name, it was like, oh, he was a really good hacker, but he never sold anything. He never profited off of anything. But he was in prison because I guess the prosecutor claimed that, well, he was in prison not because of this, but I don't know what he was exactly charged for. But anyway, during his hearing, during his sentencing, the prosecutor wanted him in solitary confinement without a phone access because they claimed he could whistle into a phone and get or launch a nuclear code or something like that. So they were afraid, the prosecution was afraid through communication he could get access to the nuclear things, which is probably bogus. But anywho, that being said, you were asking about the nuclear codes. Not the codes, but the network. I would really hope those are, air gaps and not, connected in any way, hardware or, transistors or anything. That would be my guess. Not an expert, but that you need high tons of air gap, I guess I'd say. And if anybody interested in that, look up what air gapping is. You need lots of air gap.
Okay. All right. Now, so like I was saying, I don't think the plan is to actually militarily engage Russia, because that would be insane. You'd have a nuclear war. The idea is to gaslight the world, the external world, in order to maintain crushing economic sanctions, which then would lead to the Russian population becoming angry at Putin, and then, making the ground fertile for regime change. But what we're seeing, there is a poll that I saw. This was, I just logged on to, I opened up a new computer window in my browser, and I get Yahoo News or whatever it is. It pops up, and I see these headlines, and that's kind of how I see what normie news is. I almost never will even look at it, because so much of the news that Yahoo or Microsoft Network or whatever it is, with what they think that people are interested in, it's going to be all this Hollywood stuff. It's going to be Kim Kardashian, just like all right. The stupidest stuff. But I did see this headline, and it was something, it was from CNN. It was linked to a CNN story, and it was something like experts baffled by Putin's rising popularity. And it showed that his popularity has gone up by 12 points. But the thing is, but going up by 12 points, it was at 71% before all of this started, and now it's at 83%. By the way, when was the last time we had an American president anywhere near 70% approval rating?
That's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah. I know Papa Bush was up like close to 90 for a month or so after the wonderful Gulf War. It didn't last long. And then Baby Bush, I don't know if he ever got up close to 70, but he got a big boost from the 9/11 stuff. But, certainly since then, we never have anybody even in the high 50s, really. So he's extremely popular. And this is what I wonder about, because I'm always talking about Victoria Nuland, and I don't think she's stupid. I think she speaks Russian. I mean, she does speak Russian, and she's not stupid, but I don't think she's knows. I don't think she's a genius. And I think in terms of, a lot of things, politics and whatnot, I think she's probably drunk the Kool-Aid. I think she's a Kool-Aid drinker. She's a Jew. She's a Kool-Aid drinker. And there is a certain irrationality. And I don't know why she would think that, I don't know why she would think that the Russian population would turn against Putin. Maybe she thinks it's going to take time. And maybe that's, when I say maybe, almost certainly, she thinks it's going to take time. It's not going to be something immediate. But the thing is, what maybe she hasn't understood, because I don't think these people in the government, I don't think there are a lot of geniuses. I'm not saying they're stupid, but I don't think there's a lot of geniuses, and I think they miscalculate a lot of stuff. And I don't know. I don't think they really fully understood that over the past 8 years that Russia and China and even India, that they have been, I mean, Russia in particular has really been preparing for sanctions. It's been trying to make its economy sanction-proof, if not sanction-resistant.
Russia has de-dollarized their economy more than any other one or any other nation in history. They have one of the lowest debt to GDP ratios in the world, if not the lowest, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Putin, whether you like him or not, and I like him, I didn't like him at first. And I was, when he ran for president in 2000, I was.
Doesn't have our best interest at heart. I don't think he's got a best interest at heart.
Yeah, well, whatever. He doesn't have to have our best interest at heart. But he does have his own population's best interest at heart, and which is unlike the people who run our society don't have our best interest at heart. So you know, there is all of that. But what I think they've missed is that that Russia has you know they've done all sorts of things, like you mentioned. They got their debt down. They have a trade surplus. They don't have this giant budget deficit like we do all the time. But then also, in combination with China and to a lesser extent India, they've been developing alternative systems, alternatives to SWIFT, alternatives to MasterCard, alternatives to all sorts of things.
And that's a very good thing, I believe. That's a very good thing. It's breaking up the Western, the Western, I guess you could say, the dollar, you know, it's breaking up the dollar. I think that is a good thing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir.
No, that's exactly right. There was a point made by this gentleman whom I mentioned earlier. He's got a Spanish name, and I don't know. I don't speak Spanish. I can't quite remember his name. Maybe I can see it on the fly here. Maybe I can't. Let's see. I don't know if I can see it on the fly. At any rate, a point he was making, maybe this is it. Yeah, here it is. His name is, wait for it, drum roll. His name is Gonzalo Lira.
The way it is.
And the point
in Europe.
The point he was making was that had Trump not won the election in 2016, you would have had Hillary Clinton would have come in, and Hillary Clinton was very, very anti-Russian by that point, right? I mean, she was already, during the election campaign, was calling Trump a Russia puppet and all this. But also, she wanted to have a girl power cabinet. She wanted Janet Yellen as her Secretary of Treasury. She wanted, I think, Fiona Hill as her Secretary of Defense. There was some other woman, I think a Jewish woman, that was also in the running for that. And she wanted Victoria Nuland, who she was close to. When she was Secretary of State, Victoria Nuland was her spokesman. And she wanted Victoria Nuland as Secretary of State. And so you would have had this same crew in there, but 4 years earlier, which means that Russia and China would have had 4 years less time to sanction-proof their economies and develop these alternative systems. And, you know, that's interesting. And the fact that they had – and his point is that had Trump not been elected – the stuff that we're seeing in Ukraine now, like, that would have all been implemented in 4 years earlier, right? And when I say implemented, people say, oh, but it was Russia that attacked. But, it was Russia that was being provoked all throughout the past year with, the NATO expansion pressures, with Ukraine saying it's ready to develop nuclear weapons by increased attacks. And I say increased because they were always ongoing. On the Donbass, the killing of thousands and thousands of ethnic Russians in the Donbass regions by, shelling from the Ukrainian military and whatnot. So all this stuff could have happened 4 years earlier at a time when Russia was that much less prepared. So that was the point. How does that sound?
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't. I'm surprised it didn't, make their big move. in 2014 whenever they made their move to Crimea.
Yeah. Well, you know, they made that – well, who – the move in Crimea? Because, I mean, the coup d'etat, that was conducted by the United States. Now, the Crimea – absorbing Crimea but not absorbing the Donbass, well, that was – you know, Russia absorbed Crimea. Right. Basically
– You are right. Yeah, that – Their move in Crimea was largely a defensive response. There was the CIA BS that led to that. You are correct. But I want to real quickly, before we run out of time, I want to get your opinion on whether you think China will make their move on Taiwan, or if they will, or the benefit. Or what do you think about that? Yay or nay?
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff LLC, 417-932-6419.
Whether you think China will make their move on Taiwan, or if they will, or the benefit, or what do you think about that? Yay or nay?
Okay, I think that the only things that would prompt China to do a military action on Taiwan, one of two things. One would be like a general World War III, and then all bets are off. Or two, a declaration of independence by Taiwan. As long as Taiwan doesn't declare itself independent, it will be allowed to operate de facto independent. But the moment they declare that independence, they lose the independence. And that's kind of the enigma of the whole thing, because China's big, it's self-confident, and it can play a waiting game. And because it's self-confident, it feels that sooner or later, the bulk of the people in Taiwan are just going to want to come home and be part of China. It's got that confidence.
That has a big implication on cybersecurity and computers and security in general, is because I believe a great majority, more than half, I don't want to put a number, but I believe it's more than half of the CPUs, the chips that run our average phones and computers, all of those, more than half, like I said, originate from Taiwan. I believe that's one of the strategic goals of the Chinese, is that's what they want. But anyway, that's a very big topic for another discussion, I guess.
But under the current relationship, or the relationship that they have had with Taiwan over these past 35 years, they've had access to Taiwanese technology. And, to the extent that China has a computer chip industry of its own, where did that technology come from? It came from Taiwan. China and Taiwan
the technology really came from Europe originally.
Or the United States. I mean, Texas Instruments and like that. But like the technological investment, industrial investment in China didn't start with America or Europe. It started with Taiwan. And because, the Taiwanese, they speak the same language, and they can just build factories across the straits and take advantage of all of that, the cheap labor.
Say religion, too. They're largely Catholic in Taiwan, and there's a religious aspect of that as well.
Well, the whole culture, Taiwan has a higher percentage of Chinese people than China itself, because Taiwan has very small minority populations, whereas China has, has the Uyghurs and the Tibetans and whatnot. But yeah, that's, I feel that this Victoria Nuland attack on Ukraine, on Russia by using Ukraine, it's going to fail. I don't see it as a winning strategy. And I think that, in the long run, over the next few years, dominance of the dollar, financial dominance of, the SWIFT system and American/Western financial institutions is going to decline. And you're going to get a very strong alternative financial/economic bloc, trading bloc, that Russia, China, India, and other countries like Iran, Pakistan, they've got the goods, and they will actually be able to do fine without the West, and the West is going to suffer more. That's the way I see it. But we are pretty much out of time now.
Right. Well,
thank you for joining me, Gilbert.
Yeah, great show. Thank you for having me again, sir. Look forward to the next one.
And thank you for joining me. And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of Ask Me the Radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.